After the Bauhaus takes over the royal stables, the students begin to divide up the interior of the building and set it up as a workshop. This creates two large main rooms. You are now in the first of these rooms, which is the actual workshop of the Bauhaus pottery. Six potter's wheels were mounted one behind the other on a long continuous bar. Bauhaus student Eva Deutschbein Oberdiek remembers the situation in the workshop.
Lindig was sitting in the workshop against the back wall. He was a born potter. He had actually studied sculpture, but you need to be as hard as iron and fanatical to be a sculptor. Lindig was neither. He turned very thin-walled vessels with an incredibly fine touch, which looked as if they had been blown or embossed in metal. Every shape was pushed as far as it would go, pushing the material to its limits. You found yourself thinking that his teapots would cave in, but they didn't. Friedlander sat at the wheel in front of him. Marguerite F., born in Lyon. Black, intelligent, intensely hardworking. She turned very well, with thin walls, but you could never recognize her pots as being Friedlander-esque. That was always Lindig's subtlety, to be a little more delicate and steeper. Then there was Bolgler. Now, once again, he was a born non-potter. His intelligence got in the way. He said, "What do I want to work again on a form that has already been perfected, as I will only make it weaker?" And so he concluded brilliantly that you can take an upright form of teapot, disassemble it into its component parts, and then cast them in plaster. He did so, and, depending on how he composed them, he created 6 or 8 different teapots. He was thus the only one up to now to have made the leap from craft to industry with perfect logic. This result was very elegant, but too cool. I was next. I was always pleased to receive an order to turn 100 cups for firing, as this was a useful thing to do. What I liked just didn't work, and when I wanted to adapt things with my own creativity, then Marx came past and said, "That pot looks like a bumptious wog." A couple of times I actually succeeded. A milk jug that I then built up stripwise. Buri, a Swiss painter, not a potter, sat in front of me. He was probably the most virtuous and straightest of us all, but his pots didn't have a real look. Hubner sat in front of him. He was really only in Dornberg to practice playing the clarinet undisturbed. Sometimes Buri would say to him, "If you want to torment me, do it now, because I want to sleep later." Then Wildenhain was there for a while, who came from Saxony. I can't really remember much about what he did. And then Hintenberger came into the workshop. What's more, in 14 days he turned pots better than all of us, apart from Lindig. But his work was so awful that he quickly disappeared again. Then there was a real Countess Groth, sober, modest, and efficient, who is said to have done well on her own. I can no longer remember much about her work. Ah, yes. And then there was also Renate Riedel. She was a great girl. In many ways, she actually would have fit in better in the present day. She had learned a little about turning pots with more of a folklore character in Bavaria somewhere, an approach she didn't want to give up. I really had a secret respect for her, because there was no way that she wanted to devote herself to the spirit of the place, to which we had all succumbed. That was probably all of them. Oh, Luber was there too, a pastor's son, who built his furniture himself in the style of the urban complex, but I can't remember anything about his abilities.